Life was chugging along just fine for Tyrone Taylor. That is, until he lost his job when the steel plant closed in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania back in 1983. Drugs and alcohol sped his descent, and he eventually wound up spending 20 years homeless on Skid Row in Los Angeles. But one day he looked up as a woman gazed down at him. It was his daughter, who had found him after an exhausting family search. It was that moment, when he looked up in his daughter's eyes, that turned his life around. He went clean and sober, and with the help of social services, moved into an apartment, and he now spends his days working the streets, helping those in need. His untiring efforts to help the homeless led the mayor of Los Angeles to proclaim Tyrone the mayor of Skid Row. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Society of St. Vincent de Paul's Cardinal Manning Center in the heart of L.A.'s Skid Row. Join me as Tyrone Taylor shares his life journey.
My name is Tyrone Taylor. I'm originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I have three beautiful young daughters, and I had them, when I looked at them, I seen me in them, and I instantly called them my three queens. As they got older, they called me their king, and that's the relationship we had. There was nothing to come between me and my daughters until I started drinking alcohol. It diluted my relationship with my daughters, and I didn't know where I crossed over that invisible line where alcohol became more important than trying to see my daughters. From the hangovers, and then from the drinking and the lifestyle. And I worked in the steel mills in Pittsburgh. I'm retired from J&L Steel. And when they closed down and shut down in the early 80s, they laid a lot of us off from work. And by me being depressed and so disappointed not having income and had to resort to welfare, which was unspeakable, and back and then, I didn't get fired is because of the economy. And it disappointed me. And I started drinking. And I started mingling with people at night, the night people, the women, speakeasies, after-hour joints. And I was born and raised in the Church of God in Christ, so my grandfather was a minister, and I was never taught those lifestyles until I started drinking. And I was kind of disappointed to my grandfather, which he is my hero. You know, he lived to 104, and he preached in the church, and I used to watch him preach, and I was so concerned about him because he preached so animately. I thought he was going to have a stroke up there, and I was waiting. I mean, he said, well, you need to calm down, but he was so fired up with his ministry. And it was me and my brother stayed with my grandfather. There's five of us in our family. My mom died when I was 4 years old, and not having a mother, my grandfather raised me and my brother, and he distributed my other family members to some of his kids. He had 12 kids, six boys and six girls. My mother was the oldest of the lot, and she was the first one to pass away. And he raised me and my brother. And he raised us, me not knowing, he was grooming me and my brother to be ministers. And somewhere along the line, they say the ministers' kids are the worst ones, and I guess I was one of the ones. And I had to have my own identity. And I told my grandfather, I remember one day I said, I'm grown, Dad, Granddad. What that mean? He said, well, I think I need to go out there and find what the world had to offer me. He said, you better hurry up before you lose it. Little did I know anything about life, but he let me go out there. And when I went out there, I found out what life was about. All the things I wanted to do, I started doing. And what happened is I started drinking, and I had a lot of things. I had bought a house, I bought a car, but my drinking was more dominantly affected in my life than anything. And I spiraled into homelessness from the drinking. And my brother brought me to Las Vegas. I dealt cars in Las Vegas, and I was a 21 dealer, and I started drinking again in Las Vegas because drinks are most popular in Las Vegas. Someone told me to come to L.A., and I thought I can start my life all over again in L.A., but when I got here, there was no work to be found, and everybody was drinking. It was drinking, like, on the streets, and I ran in the Skid Row, and people were living this so openly with the drinking and the drugs, and I got swallowed up in that lifestyle, and for 20 years, I lived homeless on the streets of Skid Row.
Right here.
We're on these streets right out here. I used to sleep in front of St. Vincent's doorway for many years, and I would come in here to shower. They'd give me socks, and they would always tell me about a program but I was not listening at that particular time. And I'd had my experience living on the street for 20 years, and I've been affiliated with St. Vincent for over 30 years. You know, I gave up on life, and me giving up on life, somehow I made a pact with the devil. Subconsciously, I made a pact with the devil. It came a time when the devil had to collect, and by him collecting, I ended up homeless. I didn't know the impact of homelessness because I didn't know nothing about homelessness. I'd have seen people living on the street, and I didn't think it was a bad thing because, you know, everybody in the whole area were homeless. So we became distinct entities. Everybody was doing the same thing. It was acceptable. Comfort and ease that everybody's the same. So nobody was talking about nobody down there. So it was a place for me to hide out and do all the things that I always imagined I wanted to do. And I did some quite demoralizing things out there in my addiction that I was somewhat ashamed of until I got into the Alcoholics Anonymous and I started finding out that I was not a bad person. I was a sick person. And me living homeless for 20 years, I washed up in L.A. River. I used to live on the 6th Street Bridge. I dropped to a bottomless pit. I lost all contact with life. I lost my self-esteem. I lost my respect. I lost all my dreams and aspirations. I lost the love for my kids. And I just spiraled into, I call it, triple darkness. My mind, my body, and spirit was taken away from me. And in return, I became hopeless and homeless. And I became powerless over decisions I was making in my life.
But something changed.
What happened is my daughter came out here and found me.
Your daughter, wow.
She came out to 20 years. She came out here, and she walked up on me. I was laying on the street, and she called out and said, "Dad," and I hadn't heard those words in 20 years. I looked up, and I seen this beautiful girl coming over to me, and I asked her, "Who are you, young lady?" She said, "I'm your daughter, Dad," and somehow that erupted my spirit. When I looked at her, I seen high school prom that I was not there. I seen all those years that I missed, and I traded in for alcohol and drugs. And I felt so demoralizing, and I felt so ashamed of what I had became. I made a promise to her that day that I was going to do something with my life. I didn't know what was going to be done. Somehow I stumbled into, they call about the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I walked into there, the people in there, they opened their arms up to me, and they welcomed me into that fellowship. And they said, "Welcome into the land of the living." I haven't heard those words in so many years. Living, I've been dying. Mentally, physically, and spiritually. And then people showed me how life is without alcohol and drugs one day at a time. And I just knew it wouldn't work for me. I said, "One day I'm going to drink again." I was just waiting for it to call me because I had always drank. I always needed to drink. Out of my 55 years of being of age, that I never, never, ever stopped drinking. I did it for 30 days, and I got my 30-day chip, and it was a miracle. It was a truly miracle for me. I started coming back to St. Vincent's, and I hadn't had an apartment in 20 years. All my time was living on the street, on the sidewalk, pushing a shopping cart through St. Vincent's. They advocated for me, and I got my first apartment, and I was so stunned at the apartment. The name of it was called The Rainbow. I went from Skid Row to the apartment called The Rainbow for the first time in my life in 20 years. I had an apartment prior before I got here, but my homelessness and everything snatched it all away from me. And I started to start at zero all over again. And when I looked at the apartment, they showed me my room. I had a bed in there. I had a refrigerator. I became so grateful. And the most profound thing I seen in that apartment was a free roll of toilet paper. That grounded me, how grateful I was giving my life back. And from that day, I walked into treatment on April the 1st, 2005, April Fool's Day. I didn't know what to expect. In return, my life has been given back to me. I've been clean and sober now 13 years. I do this one day at a time, but I can see how my life has been given back to me, and I became a part of St. Vincent's by doing a lot of voluntary work around here and trying to show others by example. I don't like to hear people preach about it. I like to see what you do about it. Best example of a story to me is a person living life. And what I do, I walk through Skid Row, and those who know me, they look at me as somewhat achievement, but I got to do this one day at a time.
Do you ever see yourself back in time on the street in the eyes of others?
I see them in eyes of others, the people. I see them, people I drank with. I see them out there, and I feel for them somewhat, but I don't feel sorry for them because that's what we always feel. You know, when you're homeless, poor me, poor me, poor me another drink. sorry is a way out. You have to have the decision. Alcoholics Anonymous and all those fellowships, they're not there for the ones who need it. It's those who want it. And I wanted my life back. And if you want it, they say it's free. All it takes is the willingness. All you have to be willed to live. And I share with them, you know, the price that I paid for drinking and using, I could have bought you a home, me a home. And what I do now, I take care of my grandkids. I have 5 grandkids. I send money to them every month. I say, how can you afford to do that? And you don't work, Granddad. I said, God has found a way for me. You know, every dollar I get, every excess money that I have, I get a retirement pay now. It's from God. And I call it, it's a gift that's been given to me. So I don't worry about money. I don't trip on money. I just pay my bills. And if I can, I send money to my grandkids every month. And I have a life that's comfortable. I don't have a lot of jewelry. I don't have a lot of cars. I have this freedom that's given to me inside. And this gift, I call it the L-shape. That's from God to me, to someone else, number love. I call it the L-shape for love. And if I continue to do like I do that one day at a time, my life is getting better. So I share that wherever I go and try to inspire people to look and see what alcohol is doing for them and what alcohol is doing to you. What I seen was trying to kill me. And like I said, I was 55 years old when I came into treatment, and I didn't know what to expect to do with my life at that time. But while I was in treatment, getting myself together, my daughter, who came out and found me, she orchestrated through the steel mills my retirement pay. Said, Dad, I got the paperwork for you. She went back to Pittsburgh, and she got all the paperwork they did for me and got my pension distributed to me. And this is someone I hadn't seen in 20-some years. I love that young lady. I love all 3 of my daughters, but she had the initiative to come out here and find me from Pittsburgh.
How did she find you?
She came out here with my oldest brother. My oldest brother seen me walking the streets pushing a shopping cart. He was so shocked to see me looking in that condition. And he asked me, what was I doing? I told him I was working. See, it became a job after a period of time. Living on the street became a job. And I considered it work, which it was. And he looked at me out of disappointment because he knew I wasn't the same brother that he knew. He couldn't reach me. So he went back and told my daughter. And she flew out here on February the 14th, Valentine's Day, 2005. And they came to St. Vincent's here. And she found out this is the shelter that I usually come. And she offered the guys in here, the homeless people, $40 if they can find me. And they went looking all over it. But my name wasn't Tyrone then. See, we live on the street in homelessness. We change our names.
What was your name?
My name was OPP, Other People's Property. And that's what I went by. And they knew me by that. The people downstairs, they knew me. Some people still call me OPP. That's what they knew me as. And everybody have alias names down here. A lot of times we don't want to be found. They don't want to be, you know, located. So you don't know their real name until you get to talk to them. But they knew me as OPP, and they went out looking for me. And one young man said, there he is, sleeping on the ground. And I was over by this GR building down here and laying on the ground, and she approached me. I didn't know who she was, but she started talking. And when she said her name, Shantae, that's the one I named. I named her Shantae. Somehow it rubbed my spirit, and she grabbed and hugged me. And for the first time in 20 years, I started crying. I was a hardcore person, but she broke me into tears. And I was tears of joy, tears of relief, tears of shame that what her dad had became. But like I said, I made a promise to that young lady I was going to do something in my life. I didn't know what. 2 months later, I walked into treatment, and my life has started beginning. I built a foundation through the fellowship. I built a foundation through God and others. Places like St. Vincent's and other facilities became my new network of friends. And they rallied around me, and they support me. And it made my life worth living. I don't get no diploma. I don't get no PhD. I get a daily reprieve. And what I do with it, I go out and try to help somebody each and every day. Right now, somebody's sleeping in my apartment. I let him rest because he didn't have a place to stay. And I looked at him. I said, can I trust you? I looked at him. Can I trust you? I don't normally do it, but some of my spirit said, let him rest here for a while, you know, while I'm here. So I try to help people along the way. And sometimes it backfires. But in all, you know, I had this gift that God has given me. I don't worry about it.
How often do you get out, like on 6th Street, and walk up and down?
About once a day. I do meetings down there. I'm the treasurer for Cocaine Anonymous. They trust me with their money. That's a miracle right there within itself. They trust me with all their money. They said, let's give it to Tyrone, because everybody they had walked off with their money. So they give me their money, and I go to meetings down there. I do CA, I do AA. Sometimes I do NA. I try to keep myself from going and seeing the DA. You know, I don't want to get caught up with that one there. So I do this to keep myself out of trouble and help others.
And it makes you feel good, huh?
Make me feel good when I'm doing something for others. They call that on the altruistic plane, not looking for nothing back in return. My life has been given back to me. I'm 68 years old, so this life has been given as a gift. And I try to enjoy it each and every day, you know. I have a privilege of watching TV, which I hadn't watched in almost 20-some years. I have my own TV. I cook my own meals. I go to the doctor. I have health issues that have to be addressed. But the doctors say, Ms. Taylor, you're in pretty good shape to be your old age, you know. And my knees are giving out on me from a lot of the walk and the tear and the wear that I've done. But I think God has punished me on that end. But he gives me a chance to get up and get around and still carry the message of hope for others.
Pretty much every day you're here at St. Vincent de Paul.
Somewhere, downtown on Skid Row. I had left and went home to Pittsburgh. My daughter bought me a car, apartment, everything. And she said, Dad, are you comfortable? I said, no, I'm not comfortable here. Something was driving me, and I didn't know what it was. And as I caught my flight back to L.A., it came to me. God didn't clean me up to go about my business. He cleaned me up to do his business. And once I got back to L.A., and I started smelling that stench of that urine, I found a comfort zone. I had to be brought back to that environment.
Isn't that interesting?
It's very. You know, you get to a nice place and you feel like everything is nice, and then you said, I'm cheating God of what the purpose of my life was given to me for. It's not about going about my business. I got to do his business. And no better administration to people down in Skid Row where I'm at. Today they call me the mayor of Skid Row. I have certificates from the city of Los Angeles I bring with me wherever I go. And this was given to me from the city of Los Angeles, this certificate of appreciation.
Oh my God,
that's from a guy who slept up under the bridges and didn't have no purpose for living.
The mayor.
The mayor of Skid Row.
I love it. City of Los Angeles.
I was so stunned that people looked at me and considered that about a guy like me. But then I see what I do down there on Skid Row for others and the willingness I do it. And they ask me, do I get paid? I said, I've been overpaid. They don't know. I've been overpaid. Well, they should pay you. I said, baby, I've been paid. I've been paid to come see you. When I get ready to see my daughters, I go to Southwestern. I go to International, Delta. And they know my name. Hello, Mr. Taylor. And those words that sometimes it floors me. The people call me Mr. today. When they used to didn't want to see me coming, but now they welcome me into their life. And my daughters are grateful that the dad has been coming back to my 5 grandkids. They call me Hip Hop Grandpa. And then they walking around with a cane. They get a chance to play with them. I got a grandson playing football. And I got my youngest one, he playing the drums. And I call him and they check on me. They check on me on a regular. So life is giving back to me. I have 2 daughters in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and my oldest daughter lives in San Lorenzo, California, up here in Oakland. My grandson, he calls me Grandfather Dad because he don't have a father. So I'm his grandfather and his dad. And his kids are strange how they come up with words that nobody taught them. They just imagine this thing with their imaginative minds. They come up with so much stuff. And I'm grateful to have them in my life.
So if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, would they get in touch with you through St. Vincent de Paul?
This is my foundation. You can call me and send letters to them. I'm learning email now. I'm learning my email because this is foreign to me also. Over 40 years, I never had a phone. So when my daughter said, Dad, you better get a phone. I said, oh, no. I was used to phones being for drug dealers. But I found out this is not the case. You need to have a phone. And I got a phone, and I learned how to Google, and I learned how to spell off of these phones. I can go there and get any word. And just imagine these phones are very, very unique for me.
So you like it now?
I like the life that's given to me.
Yeah.
The simple things in life. Mm-hmm. I like the simple things. There don't have to be a whole bunch of going on, nothing with me. I get a chance to go to dinner engagements from St. Vincent's, places that I'd never. Western Bonaventure, we had a fundraiser. They had me there as a key speaker at that facility. I was over flattered, and I was homeless. I used to pick the cans up around that hotel. I'm walking in there with a
keynote speaker.
Yeah, I was a key speaker. I used to pick up cans around the building many years ago. I slept at every place downtown here. There's no place I haven't slept at. All the way from the freeway, all the way down to the river. I've slept under all these bridges, and I slept in a lot of the alleys. And this is the journey God has had me on. And I'm so grateful. I'm amazed sometimes myself. This is the first thing I bought of any gold, this gold watch. And I bought this after I had 12 years of sobriety. I said, 12 years, one digit at a time, I'm going to buy me a gold watch. I used to buy those 10-hour watches. They break. I said, go ahead and buy you a watch. I said, gold watch. And they came, buy you a 12-digit watch. And I keep this to remind me of my life. This is part of my journey. And these people in the stores, they know me all. And I used to sleep in front of one store down there that sold distiller jerseys. I used to watch it, sleeping in front of the store. I thought I'd never, ever get a chance. But when I got clean sober, I went back to that store. I asked the man, I'd like to buy that jersey. He said, you look familiar. He kept looking at me. He said, you look familiar. I said, I used to sleep in front of your door. He said, that's right. He looked at me, what happened to you? I looked so bright and so vibrant. And I told him my journey. I went into recovery. And he gave that jersey to me. He said, you're doing so much work here, I'm going to get this jersey to you. And this is things that happen, and you don't even expect it. Like St. Vincent asked me to share different places, and other people said, well, they need to pay you. I said, you don't know, I've been overpaid. So I'm grateful for doing just what I'm doing now. And when I get done with you, I got to go home. I got to sleep for a couple of hours, and I got to get up and go do a meeting. I go to a meeting down there right next door where my life began at the Rainbow, the new apartment they built called the Abbey. I facilitate meetings in that building every Monday. So I got to suit up and show up. And you know something? God shows out in my life. That's all I have to do. I don't worry about getting loaded. I gave it to him. I turned my life over to him. And that's not my job no longer.
Oh, my God, Tyrone. I could spend all day with you.
It's an honor. I really, truly.
Well, I'm the one that's honored, man.
No, it means to me to be of service to other people. I'm grateful for my life.
Tyrone, what an absolute pleasure.
It's an honor. It's an honor for me. Honor and a privilege. Like I say, I do this one day at a time. You know, I've been shortchanging God for so many years. It's time for me to give back.
I think you've already done that.
Yeah, give it back. No, I got a lot more work to do.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from St. Vincent de Paul in Los Angeles.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. Once again, svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.
And I ain't gonna be treated this way, Lord God, I ain't gonna be treated this way.